Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions are brought to us by Britannica.com and Time Magazine. Question number one. Which of the following is a true statement about the month of November? Is it A, November's full moon is traditionally called the Rabbit Moon? Is it B, the day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday? Is it C, it's from the Latin word novem, which means 11? Or is it D, all of the above statements about November are true? Or is it E, none of the above statements about November are true? So what is the truth about this month anyway? And question number two, what is the most played song in music history? Is it A, Summertime? Is it B, Amazing Grace? Is it C, It's a Small World After All? Or is it D, Monster Mash? The most played song, what is that tune anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website npr.org, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November the 1st. Our transitions this week acknowledge the musical figures who passed away recently, singer Jack Jones, Grateful Dead bassist Phil Lesh, songwriter for the Eagles J.D. Souther, and the hard bop sax player who crafted jazz standards Benny Golson. Here's what NPR.org reports. October 25th, 2024. Jack Jones, a Grammy-winning crooner known for the Love Boat television show theme song, has died. He was 86. Jones died Wednesday night at a hospital in Rancho Mirage, California, after battling leukemia for more than 2 years. Jones began his singing career in the 1950s, and in the 1960s won 2 Grammy Awards for Best Vocal Performance, one on the song Lollipops and Roses, and one on the song Wives and Lovers. He was nominated for several other Grammys in later years. In 1980, his Love Boat television show theme rose to number 37 on the Billboard U.S. Adult Contemporary Songs chart. Jones was also a frequent guest on the popular romantic comedy show, in which guest stars including Gene Kelly and Janet Jackson would come aboard for a cruise and fall in love with each other. A social media account for the Ed Sullivan Show posted on X on Thursday that Jones lit up the show with smooth vocals and unforgettable performances. His music will forever inspire us, the post said. Thank you for the memories, Jack. Rest in peace. And Phil Lesh, bassist and founding member of the countercultural rock band The Grateful Dead, has died. He was 84 years old, born in Berkeley, California in 1940. Lesh was initially drawn to classical music. He played violin as a child before turning his attention to the trumpet, which he studied throughout high school and his time at the College of San Mateo. In the early 1960s, he met banjo player Jerry Garcia, who later asked him to join his rock band, the Warlocks. And in 1965, the Grateful Dead was born, with Lesh finding his footing in the improvisation-driven group as he went. Over the decades of musical longevity and reinvention, Lesh went on to sing lead vocals on some of the band's most memorable songs. After Garcia's death in 1995, Lesh reunited with fellow band members Bob Weir and Mickey Hart and keyboardist Bruce Hornsby to tour as The Other Ones, and later The Dead. The Lesh family continued to champion live music in Northern California, most recently organizing a festival called Sunday Daydreams, which Lesh headlined this past summer. I would have to say that music and performing are as essential as food and drink to me, but even more so as I get older, Lesh said in June. While it can sometimes be more of a challenge physically than it was when I was a young whippersnapper, I've found that age brings wisdom, and with that comes musical experience and knowledge that I didn't have when I was younger. Ashokan Farewell introduces our country music news. It's titled, Three of the Most Comforting Country Music Classics to Seek Solace In. It's written by Peter Burditt, October 22, 2024, AmericanSongwriter.com. Whether it be the changing of the seasons or that you're having a bad day, there is no better genre to find comfort and sadness in the country music. If you're one of those people who is prone to melancholy, yet find a sort of relief in it, don't fear, because you are far from alone. Finding solace in music is therapeutic, reaffirming, and in all helps one reconnect to the greater human experience present in all of our lives. To feel down isn't great, but to sit down alongside a friend, family member, or non-present musician makes it somewhat more enjoyable. Well, we aren't Aristotle or Freud, so we can't answer why that is. However, we can arm you with songs to help you extract some sort of comfort from your melancholy. So here are three of the best country music songs to seek solace in. The first one listed in this article is Johnny Cash's cover of I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. Arguably one of the saddest albums of all time is Johnny Cash's American Four, The Man Comes Around. With songs such as Hurt and Danny Boy, the album encompasses the voice and emotions of Cash's demise. It's harrowing and sorrowful and makes one contemplate their own mortality and suffering. That being so, Cash's cover of Hank Williams' country classic, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, just adds to the overall somber mystique. We could bore you and try to sum up an explanation as to why this song makes one's feelings of despair. However, those feelings are rarely translated well on paper, so you just have to hear it for yourself. Between their context of the album and Cash's rhythmic voice, the song is bound to leave one in that warm sack of sadness. Then there's Towns Van Zant's Waitin' Around to Die. Waitin' Around to Die is arguably the most potently poignant not only in his catalog, but in all of country music. The premise of the song is simple yet somber, as the general meaning Van Zant hopes to articulate is that a life filled with suffering is still better than just waiting around to die. Its detailed stories and visceral imagery brings the sense of belonging to the universal sensation of suffering. And last but not least is Kris Kristofferson's Why Me? Kris Kristofferson's catalog of songs includes many upbeat tunes sung over subdued meanings, though that is not the case for Why Me? Both a call for God's forgiveness and an acknowledgement of one's ungratefulness, Kristofferson's lyrics cut deeper than a 1,000-degree knife. The epic subject matter paired with the chanting chorus makes the song tailored for greater introspection regarding the divine. Holistically, Kristofferson's tune may make one think about what they've taken for granted, how they've sabotaged their blessings and second chances, and how they have wasted the grace given to them by God and others. When listened to, the song will surely evoke a paralyzing, comfortable sense of self-pity, though maybe this country music classic will put a smile on your face in light of a bad day. And in rock and pop music news, we have this article titled, The Best ELO Songs of All Time, Electric Light Orchestra's Greatest Moments, written by Ed Mosley and published in the Arizona Republic newspaper on October 20th, 2024. Coming in at number 10, 10,538 Overture from their 1971 album. This is where it all began, a song Jeff Lynne wrote in the hope that it would be recorded by a group he joined in 1969. Lynne was inspired to write the song by guitarist, celloist Roy Wood, who wanted to pick up where the Beatles left off, merging rock and classical arrangements. The song opens on a haunting, psychedelic riff the Beatles would indeed be proud to call their own, double-tracked on distorted guitars, and then the orchestra joins in. The orchestra, backing composer and singer Jeff Lynne, consists of Bill Hunt on French horn and hunting horn, Steve Woolen on violin, and Ron Wood sawing on multiple cellos while also playing everything from clarinet and oboe to bassoon. Rather than using it as a side B, as initially planned, they used it to launch a new project called Electric Light Orchestra. It peaked at number 9 in the UK, the perfect number for a song meant to pick up where the Beatles left off. Years later, The Guardian headlined an article titled, ELO, the Band the Beatles Could Have Been. By that point, Lynn had joined the Traveling Wilburys band with Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, Bob Dylan, and an actual Beatle, George Harrison, and led ELO through a dizzying stream of timeless singles such as Turn to Stone, Xanadu, Hold On Tight, and All Over the World. The rankings of ELO songs in this article continues, coming in at number 9, 1979's Don't Bring Me Down. Number 8, 1976, Do Ya. Number 7 is 1977's Sweet Talkin' Woman. 1975's Strange Magic is number 6. 1974's Can't Get It Out of My Head is number 5. And Evil Woman from 1975 is ranked at number 4. At number 3 is Telephone Line, 1976. At number 2 is Mr. Blue Sky, 1977. And we'll close out today's program with Mr. Blue Sky. And at number 1 in the article ranking, it's this one.
It's a living thing. It's a terrible thing to lose. It's a given thing. What a terrible thing to lose.
Number 1, Living Thing, 1976. This was supposed to be a song about a holiday in Spain. But when Lynn came back to the studio and listened to the playback a day after tracking his vocal, he decided he hated those lyrics, wiped them off the track, and spent a half an hour coming up with words that fit the vibe so perfectly. It's hard to imagine it could have ever had different lyrics. It's a living thing, which, to be clear, is love, from the magic of sailing away on the crest of a wave to the sadness of so let her go, don't start spoiling the show, it's a bad dream. It's a terrible thing to lose, as they say. It's a brilliant arrangement drawing you in with Mike Kaminsky's mournful violin with a flourish to lift the chorus in response to It's a Living Thing. This flawless record strikes the perfect balance of undeniable pop sensibilities and richly orchestrated classical arrangements. The first single released from A New World Record, it peaked in the UK at number 4, which at the time was a career high, hitting number 13 on the Billboard Hot 100. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following is a true statement about the month of November? Is it A, November's full moon is traditionally called the Rabbit Moon? Is it B, the day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday? Is it C, its name is from the Latin word novem, which means 11? Is it D, all of the above statements about November are true? Or is it E, none of the above statements about November are true? Correct answer? Answer B, the day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday. Why is that so named? Well, it is believed by many that the term Black Friday derives from the concept that businesses operate at a financial loss or are in the red until the day after Thanksgiving, when massive sales finally allow them to turn a profit or put them, quote-unquote, in the black. However, Britannica states that is untrue and adds that a more accurate explanation of the term dates back to the early 1960s when police officers in Philadelphia began using the phrase Black Friday to describe the chaos that resulted when large numbers of suburban tourists came into the city to begin their holiday shopping and in some years attend Saturday's annual Army-Navy football game. The huge crowds created a headache for the police, who worked longer shifts than usual as they dealt with traffic jams, accidents, shoplifting, and other issues. Within a few years, the term Black Friday had taken root in Philadelphia. City merchants then attempted to put a prettier face on the day by calling it Big Friday. And by the way, the day after Thanksgiving is also called Buy Nothing Day, You're Welcome Day, and Native American Heritage Day. As noted in the Old Farmer's Almanac, November's full moon is traditionally called the Beaver Moon, not the Rabbit Moon. Why? In the colonial era, this was the month to set one's beaver traps before the swamps froze over and the beavers retired to their lodges to ensure a supply of warm winter furs. An article in thesource.com adds that while November is best known for Thanksgiving and Veterans Day, it also packed with special days of awareness and observances to celebrate. Two Christian holidays, All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day, for example, fall within early November, and the Advent calendar begins at the end of the month to count down until Christmas as well. Daylight savings time also ends in November, though the exact date varies. And the answer to the second question, what is the most played song in music history? Is it A, Summertime? B, Amazing Grace? C, It's a Small World After All? Or D, Monster Mash? And the correct answer is answer C, It's a Small World. As noted in Time.com, nobody famous sang this tune. It was never a hit single and got almost no play on Top 40 radio. There's even a dispute over the exact title. Yet, It's a Small World, also known as It's a Small, Small World and It's a Small World After All, is very likely the most played song in music history, nearly 50 million times, and it was the first heard 50 years ago this month. Various sources cite some other popular tunes, but they can't match the 50 million figure reached by this song. The Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling from 1964 has had a very respectable 8 million plays on radio and TV. And The Beatles' Yesterday from 1965 had 7 million in the U.S. alone, and many more in the rest of the world. Irving Berlin's White Christmas, introduced by Bing Crosby in 1942, has inundated the airwaves ever since, but only for a few weeks each year. There's little debate that Patti and Mildred Hill's Happy Birthday to You has been performed more than any other song, but not in public, unless you want to risk being sued. This leaves It's a Small World, composed by Disney staff writers Richard and Robert Sherman for the 1964-65 New York World's Fair Pavilion ride that's officially known as Pepsi Presents Walt Disney's It's a Small World, a salute to UNICEF and the world's children. Designed by Disney Imagineer Mary Blair, the Small World ride took passengers on an 11-minute boat ride through a series of halls representing different parts of the world, as several hundred animatronic, mechanical, dolls, cavorted to the children's chorus of the Sherman's simple refrain over and over and over. After 2 6-month seasons in New York, the ride was installed at Disneyland in Anaheim. As the company opened new parks, Florida's Walt Disney World in 1971, Tokyo Disney World in 1983, Paris in 1992, and Hong Kong in 2008, it's a small world replicated like kudzu. And its signature song, Latched or Leached, its way into tens of millions of minds. If you've never been to a Disney theme park, you may not have heard It's a Small World. If you have, no operation short of a lobotomy will extract it from your memory. It's a four-chord jingle selling international brotherhood. The It's a Small World ride has run in the five Disney parks for a total of 149 years and 8 months. Shave off a few years for times when the parks are closed or the ride is shut down, and add the 12 months when the ride was in New York. We get 148 years. Multiply this by 365 days a year, and you get 54,020 days. According to Disney fact sheet, during a 16-hour operating day in the parks, the It's a Small World song is played on average 1,200 times. That would bring the total plays at Disney parks to 64,820,000. But many of the parks aren't open 16 hours a day, especially in winter. The rough year-round average is more like 12 hours, so we take three-quarters of the 64 million number and get a very conservative 48,618,000 times the song has been played. Round that up to nearly 50 million. So let's close out today's program on a sunny note. Not to worry, it won't be the most played song ever. It's just Mr. Blue Sky by ELO. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968.